Support for WPR comes from Milwaukee Film, presenting the 16th Annual Milwaukee Film Festival, featuring local, national, and international films, April 11th through the 25th. Tickets are at mkefilm.org.
It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. In early February 1945, an ailing Franklin Roosevelt traveled together with Winston Churchill to Yalta.
The doctrine that the strong shall dominate the weak is the doctrine of our enemies, and we reject it.
The journey there, I didn't appreciate how arduous it was and how much that shapes the tone of the rest of the conference.
Historian Catherine Grace Katz is going to help tell the story.
Churchill and Roosevelt fly a harrowing night over enemy-occupied territory where there's still anti-aircraft units. They're flying at low altitude in unpressurized planes. They finally then arrive in the Crimea, where the airfield that they're landing on is dangerously short for the types of planes that they fly, and it's shrouded in fog. And then they have to drive a further 6 hours over battle-scarred roads, sometimes at no more than 20 miles an hour. And it's an absolute nightmare.
When they finally arrived, it wasn't exactly what they were expecting.
The palace that they're using had once been glamorous and beautiful. It was the summer home of Tsar Nicholas II and his family. And then when the Nazis invaded the Crimea, they stripped the palace of everything. Literally down to the doorknobs, which they could strip out and use as scrap metal.
So, not a great place to negotiate the end of a war.
The Soviets have just 3 weeks to restock it with everything they need for hundreds of people who are arriving. They just take the contents of glamorous hotels in Moscow, like the Hotel Metropole, and cart it 1,000 miles south. Maids' uniforms, all the workers there basically dressed in the waiter's attire. Miraculously, they really pulled it together in time.
There was a lot on the table at Yalta. With the war in Europe finally drawing to a close, the three men met to decide the future of Germany, Poland, Central and Eastern Europe. They wanted to create a lasting peace. But they all had different objectives.
FDR, at this point in the war, kind of writes Churchill and the British Empire off as something that belongs to the past. The Brits have really sacrificed the empire to be able to hold out until the rest of the world joined the fight against the Nazis. And for Churchill, this is personally really difficult, and I don't think FDR appreciated that position enough. Meanwhile, the war in the Pacific isn't quite as far advanced, and FDR is looking at the need for a potential ground invasion of the Japanese home islands. He wants to save as many American lives as possible. That means drawing the Soviet Union into the war in the Pacific in exchange for certain territorial concessions that Stalin has long had his eye on. Also incredibly important in Europe, especially to Winston Churchill, is the future of Poland and Polish sovereignty. Britain went to war in defense of Polish sovereignty at the outset, and Churchill does not want to return home to London and look the Polish governments in the eye and tell him they weren't able to secure that which they went to defend at the outset.
Even the finest Russian cutlery couldn't cut through all the tension. But Churchill, at least, had some help, because he took his daughter, Sarah, with him.
Sarah's role at Yalta is really to be kind of his confidant and protector in a way, and also to be that person that he could trust implicitly in an environment where it's so hard to know who to trust, where everybody has their own personal objectives. She had a really close bond with her father where she felt like she really understood the way that his mind worked.
We must strive for a sane and just peace, which will save us all and our children.
Today, we're living with the consequences of the decisions made by the people gathered there. It's a story that's newly relevant now with the conflict in Ukraine. And thanks to Catherine Grace Katz's research, we now have the perspective of three vital witnesses to that moment. The daughters of Yalta.
So there are these three incredible young women there, all between 27 and 38 years of age. Sarah Churchill, the daughter of the Prime Minister, Anna Roosevelt, the daughter of the President, and Kathleen Harriman, who was the daughter of the American ambassador to the Soviet Union, Avril Harriman. The youngest of the daughters, she's only 27. And when I started this project, I was the same age. And it's just incredible to think what it would be like to be there, you know, with Stalin at 27 years old.
History has kind of forgotten about them, and you've thankfully resurrected them. Tell us about them and why they were even there in the first place.
For me, this book really started with Sarah Churchill. I had the opportunity to be one of the first people to see her papers when the family and Churchill College at Cambridge opened her archive to researchers. She had a really close bond with her father, which led her to have opportunities during the war to serve in an incredibly unique capacity. She would be with him kind of like as a privy counselor up until the wee hours of the morning, going through the diplomatic files that had been delivered from Downing Street while they were at the conference, allowing him to express his frustration, especially with FDR at this point. And so he would be able to almost rehearse with her kind of the rough draft of what he wanted to say.
Did she, do you think, really understand her father in a way other people didn't?
I think she did. I think she really understood him more than perhaps anyone except her mother, Clementine. And a lot of this came from long hours that she would spend with him in the garden at their home, Chartwell in Kent in the English countryside, while he would be partaking in one of his favorite pastimes, which was bricklaying, which he would do to relax.
It's an interesting way to relax.
Yeah, exactly. So people know about his painting, but also, you know, bricklaying was very important to him. And Sarah would be out there kind of as his second mate, mixing the cement, handing him bricks, maintaining the plumb line. So they'd have these hours together out in the garden where they'd be chatting with each other. And Sarah said that she came to understand the way that his mind worked as if she could walk in silent step with him, anticipating his thoughts, even if he wasn't speaking. And I think that that was a bond that was incredibly important to both of them.
So that's Sarah Churchill. Now, on Roosevelt's side, his daughter Anna was there with him. And what was her role?
The relationship between Anna and FDR is really complicated. Anna and her father were very close when she was a little girl. But of course, all this changed when he was diagnosed with polio. And Anna was really sent away, kind of held at an arm's length. But at Christmas 1943, when her husband joins the army and ships out to the Mediterranean, she moves back into the White House. And Anna realizes something's not quite right about her father, that he seems very ill. And she insists he have a comprehensive exam to see what's wrong with him. And it reveals that he's dying of congestive heart failure.
Dying?
Dying, yes, because there was no cure for it at that time. And so Anna becomes the person who is really his gatekeeper at the White House, helping to decide who really needs an audience with him, who could meet with someone else, sometimes going so far as to take papers out of his inbox at night and deliver them to other people she feels can handle them.
Whoa.
Yeah. And she also is the one who's keeping the secret of his illness. He never once asked the doctor what's wrong with him. Even Eleanor Roosevelt can't quite come to terms with the fact that he isn't well.
This is so fascinating. Anna, his daughter, and the doctor seem to have been the only two people who knew that FDR was in fact dying.
Mm-hmm. And it was extremely acute. By the time they go to Yalta, he's definitely not well. You can see in pictures, sometimes he looks all right. Other times he looks like he's on death's doorstep, and that's kind of how it goes with congestive heart failure. And there were lots of rumors, you know, is he well? But then the next day he seems perfectly fine. And so Anna's just desperately trying to keep as many people away from him as possible at Yalta, including Winston Churchill, who is exhausting, you know, well and very well-intentioned, but has an exhausting personality. And FDR also sees his relationship with Stalin as more important than with Churchill at this point. So it suits his political objectives for Anna to keep Churchill away as much as possible. And unfortunately, in Anna's attempts to do everything to protect her father, which is very admirable, I think at times impeded some of the diplomacy that needed to happen, but kind of in a way that FDR wanted, and Anna didn't realize that she was kind of unwittingly playing that role. He kind of is using her at times to keep the secret, also to keep the secret of his affair with Lucy Mercer, which is a whole other story.
He was a secretive man.
Very secretive, and it's a relationship between parent and child that's really quite heartbreaking at times.
Yeah. So we should set the stage, which will bring us to the third daughter. This whole event is unfolding in a part of the world that everybody's eyes are on right now, the Crimean Peninsula, and at a particular place, this old kind of crumbling palace that gets dumped in Kathleen Harriman's lap. Tell us about her, why she's there, and what challenges she faced.
So Kathleen Harriman is the daughter of Averill Harriman, who's the ambassador of the Soviet Union. He's one of the wealthiest men in America. He was the chairman of Union Pacific Railroad, who ended up joining FDR's New Deal administration. And his younger daughter, Kathleen, was much like him, extremely athletic and adventurous. And so she decided to join him when he became the ambassador to Moscow in 1943. And she really serves as his assistant ambassador. She learned to speak Russian for both of them, translates for him at certain social functions. But by the time Yalta comes, Kathleen has had all this experience with Stalin and his inner circle, you know, has more experience with than any other American woman in history. She also knows all of the British delegation that's coming. She knows all the Americans. So Averill Harriman leaves her in Yalta as he goes off to rendezvous with Churchill and FDR. And Kathleen is kind of leading the advance team. She's like the protocol officer, communicating with the Soviets, making sure everything at the palace is set up to foster diplomacy in the most effective way. And so it's an often overlooked role, but one that's really important and continues to be so important in diplomacy today.
I have to say, I had no idea. It sounded like kind of a nightmare. The U.S. and Great Britain brought like 500 people with them. There was, what, a handful of bathrooms in this place?
Yeah, the bathrooms certainly add to, you know, moments of levity in this quite a dark time. There are all these funny stories about generals queuing for the bathroom in the morning, sending their aides to stand in line for them, others heckling each other to get out because they're taking too much time. Even one point where Stalin's guards think that he's been kidnapped, that the Americans have pulled this kidnapping stunt because Stalin disappeared into a bathroom around the corner and they didn't see him, is hilarious and just really shows, you know, the human side to even these great figures.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. And in the meantime, these world-shaping conversations they were having. So the big subject, which still resonates, is Eastern Europe, and in particular, Poland. What was the situation?
So Poland is incredibly important to Stalin and had been to the czars before him and continues to be in kind of the Russian mindset today, where there's this, been this historic paranoia about invasion through the flatlands of Poland and also Ukraine. That's the path that Napoleon used, the same path that Hitler used. And so they want to have a secure buffer around them. They want to make sure that they are in control. This is one of the main issues on the table. Churchill is determined to secure Polish sovereignty because that's what they went to defend in the first place. It's a large reason that the war started. You have Stalin then at the end here saying, yes, we'll guarantee free elections here, not to worry. And we don't need any Western observers to make sure that this is all happening the way it should. And no, we shouldn't invite the Poles here. I tried to get in touch with them, but I couldn't reach them. And so the Poles are central to the story, and they're not represented by anyone at the conference.
And Britain and the U.S. had reason not to believe what Stalin was saying, because this is not that long after the Warsaw Uprising. Averill Harriman had been very close to that and very upset, even traumatized by it.
The Warsaw Uprising was hugely eye-opening for Averill Harriman, who had gone into this alliance with the Soviet Union. He really sees them as, you know, I have done business in the Soviet Union in my professional career. He had many investments there and was one of few American businessmen who did. He thought, this is like doing business with anyone else. You know, we can find common ground, work towards a common objective. And that really changed for him in August of 1944 during the Warsaw Uprising, where there's this moment where the Polish resistance had an opportunity to expel the Nazis from Warsaw, knowing that the Red Army was not far away, that they'd come in to reinforce them. And so they do an incredible job of rising up and throwing the Nazis out as far as they can. And then the Soviet Union, instead of coming in and reinforcing them, they just stop on the bank of the river across from Warsaw. And they just let the Polish resistance just be absolutely slaughtered. And Averill Harriman, meanwhile, is lobbying Stalin to do something, lobbying Stalin to allow the Brits to do something. And he says no. It was really a turning point for Harriman and also kind of sets up some conflict between him and FDR.
How well do you think Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin understood each other?
I think that they understood each other very well in some ways and not as well in other ways. One of my favorite things that I found while I was researching was a letter from George Kennan, who was then the number two at the embassy in Moscow, writing to the Secretary of State, Edward Stettinius, who'd asked for information and bios about the Soviet bureaucrats they'd be meeting with. And he writes back and says, "I'm sorry, unfortunately, I don't have what you're looking for. We don't have good information about the Soviet bureaucrats, except for maybe Stalin himself. And any information that's out there is probably fake, the real information only given in their obituaries when they're of no use to anyone anymore. And don't be lulled into this false sense of security that invitations to dinner and rounds of golf are going to change the mind of a Soviet bureaucrat. He doesn't speak for himself. His own personal feelings don't enter it at all. It's only the objectives of the state."
So it's a really different political culture.
Very, very different. And I think FDR didn't understand that. And I think that's something that's been continuous to be a challenge for American leaders up to the present time.
Having focused on Yalta through the eyes of these daughters and read their diary entries and the letters they wrote back to family and friends, did you come to any new realizations about Yalta, see it any differently by seeing it through the daughters' eyes?
Yeah, I think it made me realize kind of just the human struggle that went along with Yalta. It's not just when we sold out to the Soviets, it was much more challenging than that. And also that it really personally affected the leaders. They're not just there trying to make a deal. They are struggling on behalf of their people. And I think the daughters provided this really tangible sense of the future for their fathers. Their own children are right in front of them. And these are the people for whom they're trying to make the world a better and safer place.
And for the women themselves, having been present at this world-shaping event, having tossed back shots of vodka with three nations' political elites, Sarah, Anna, and Kathleen went home and they did not enter politics or diplomacy or really play any further role on the world political stage. Do you think their Yalta experience had any continuing impact on any of their lives?
I definitely do. Kathleen Harriman was very reluctant to ever speak about her experiences in the Soviet Union or at Yalta. No matter what she said, people would either see her as being a fearmonger or too soft on Russia. So she just decided to really say nothing. Even her children really knew very little about her experience there. But for each of them, I think the fact that they were part of a really small community of women who knew what it was like to be in the room. And even though they didn't walk away from Yalta necessarily the best of friends, where they call each other every week, I think the unique experiences that they had had kind of being at the height of power and being at the table with all of these stakeholders, it gave them a unique ability to empathize with each other. And each of them experienced similar tragedies later in life as the lingering scars of the war affected those that they loved. And so you see certain moments where they kind of communicate with each other in reassurance and solace. It was a really lovely letter, especially between Anna, from Anna to Sarah. I don't want to give away the ending, but you can see that that shared experience they have does continue to play a role in their lives going forward.
Okay, I'm waiting for the TV series. I so want to see this on screen.
Well, things are happening on that front, so stay tuned.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That's Catherine Grace Katz. Her book is called The Daughters of Yalta.